Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. The Bodilas are a close-knit family of artists whose incredible talent and community spirit have made them a household name in Hudson, New York. Their blend of Central and West African traditions and popular culture resonates at home and reverberates on the world stage. Ilombe and Pamela Badila united to create a family and legacy of education and performance that celebrates their heritage. Ilombe passed away in 2012, and his family continues this mission. Hudson Hall presents a series of Badila family events this weekend. Spirit of the River, directed by Pamela Badila, will be performed on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. On Friday night, Badila's son, Young Paris, will perform. On Saturday night, Badila's daughter, Lady Moon, will perform with her band. We'll learn more from each of them, but before we start, I want to make sure it's clear that there are many other siblings and participants celebrating and performing in Hudson this weekend. Pamela Badila is up first. She begins by sharing the story of how she met her late husband.
It has a lot to do with a love story, too, because I was performing in the Ivory Coast in West Africa. I met some people there who wanted me to come to Paris to dance in the Grand Ballet d'Afrique Noire. And it was a very notable company in Paris that toured all over. And so I was afraid to go. Mm-hmm. I didn't speak French. I was afraid to go to Paris. So I didn't think I would accept the invitation. A friend of mine, who happened to also come from the Congo, where my husband comes from, he said to me, he's like a big brother to me. And he said, you know, if you wait until you speak French, you will never go. He was right. I took a chance. And that has a lot to do with almost everything else. You know, you take a chance. And I went there because of my love for dance. And over time, I met people in the Grand Ballet who also danced in the Ballet Theatre Codia, where my husband was one of the founding artists who created that. And I danced there. I was invited to a rehearsal. At that rehearsal, it seemed that people were very pleased with my performance, and I was told by the choreographer, Ilombe, tu danses très bien, hein? Impeccable. I was like, wow. Because this is like an iconic figure who I had known about. Even in New York, they said, Ilombe is phenomenal. I didn't have that in my mind when I went, but I realized this is the Ilombe we hear about. And that was Ballet Codia was the biggest performing and touring Congolese company. West Africa was the Grand Ballet d'Afrique Noire, and then Nkodia was the Central African company. Those are the biggest monster dance companies touring all over Europe and everything. And I was like, wow, they invited me to join the company. And I ended up becoming the female soloist for almost everything. So it just evolved, and over time, I just started watching and seeing how people engage with each other. I was now entrenched into the African community in France. I was learning French quickly by being surrounded by people. Mm-hmm. And I watched my husband with his children. He had three children when I met him. And I just watched how he was so attentive to them. And I just admired that. But over time, you know, when you're working with people and you're touring with people, you get to know them in a familiarity that you don't usually when you just come in to work and leave and go back to another adventure. Mm-hmm. So I got to realize that these are people who are more family than outsiders. And because I was established now in France, I started to realize more and more the development of what is most simply called affection towards someone who took me into consideration really deeply and tenderly. And so we built upon that affection a family by uniting for life. I believe in love. You build your love of the world through what you're doing, through your purpose. I've always noticed, even in the United States, I was purposed to mentor young people, to nurture, to guide them through programs I created at the Kudzuri Youth Center, the African American Cultural Heritage. It was a program I wanted young children to realize respect for your culture. Know first that you are Africans. Don't believe that nonsense that, you know, once you're here, you're just American. But American in itself is not a culture. It has developed and evolved into what we can find as a trendy cultural base of where people can expect that's an American kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But in America, you have so many cultures. And it's an error to say white and black, because there are white people there. Ukrainian, there, you know, people from all different cultures. You have the people who used to know, when they talk about the old country, the basic ancestry of their origin was more important than saying black and white. But because of that division, we forgot to see the deep humanity of our sense of belonging. And so I was really interested in having these children learn the belonging to be deeper than just your family presence, but the origins of your family, why you are here, and didn't start with this horrific story that you hear all the time, and that all we ever learn in school is that you were enslaved and now you're trying to get free. And it never appealed to me to hear that as a story, which I knew was to be false. My parents told me better, and I taught my children better because I was informed better. And I thought that that would be my role. And I found that over time, it evolved to be my purpose, was to teach. Guiding, mentoring is a way of teaching someone to take more agency for yourself. So from a very young age, you need to get that. Otherwise, it's so easy to learn wrongfully. And children do, in fact, learn well whatever you're teaching them. Mm-hmm. So if you're teaching them wrongfully about their culture, about their value, sense of self-worth, then they're going to grow up figuring that there are limitations that are inherent, which should never be in their mind. And that has happened for so many generations, it's very difficult to take that out. And so over time, by being in Europe, I realized that's even more enforced, that's even more in effect. And so developing the company, Djata Djata, became an international folkloric theater to try to capture that culture more from its base, and then spread it to European audiences. Look at us, see us, respect us, and acknowledge that without that culture, the culture that we call European or even civilized would not exist. And people need to really have a humble and more forthcoming manner to accept and acknowledge that without teaching history through the true chronological record of it, you disserve people who you're teaching anything, because then they don't really understand their presence. And then I think by nature of what truth is, you rob young people of their identity by not allowing them to know their story.
Tell me about the play that you're performing for the weekend. It's called Spirit of the River.
It's a story I heard, and I've also read it a long time ago, and I thought this is such a cute little story because it didn't have the depth that we're going to be pushing into it to develop the characters and develop more aspects of the scenes, where instead of it being a simple love story where there's some betrayal and then resolution, it is going to be evolving to a point where we're going to put love so far in advance of every power that exists and acknowledge that without it, even the forces of nature don't move the way you would expect, because simple rain falls and it evaporates and we have plants. But imagine if something goes on, something goes wrong, and even the forces of nature will be compelled to move because of love that is even stronger than the phenomenal, magical force of the river, that she can be even moved by love. It's important to tell this story to have people recognize water and be humble to, we cannot exist without water. How are we allowing people to filthify it in the way that they are for profit? We need to acknowledge that profit as a word is an illusion. What do you gain and lose all that exists around you? There's so much to be learned from just stopping this rat race and realizing, hey, now, we've gone so far wrong. It's like taking a highway to Mexico and you find yourself going toward Montreal. I'm going the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Stop and turn around. But we're just so busy careening so quickly, we don't take the time to stop, as if we can't stop, but we must stop. Or we're going to put ourselves in danger and risk of peril, and then those who are coming behind us, if we have any considerate compassion toward them, we must realize we're leaving them nothing if we keep on like this. It's just not correct. So what we're trying to do is look at water as the goddess that she is, and the emotional, creative energy, mother that she is. And in our play, water, to not give a spoiler, actually takes on the characteristics of a human, somebody you can look at and identify with and feel for because she looks like you.
Pamela Badilla is the co-founder of the Djata Djata Folkloric Theater Company. Spirit of the River will be performed 3 times at Hudson Hall as part of Badilla Family Weekend in Hudson, New York. To learn more, visit hudsonhall.org. Next, we welcome one of Pamela's daughters, Gonda, whose stage name is Lady Moon. Her band, Lady Moon and the Eclipse, will perform at Hudson Hall on Saturday at 7 p.m. She joins us now.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me about how the music you create with your band and what you do now relates to and is different from the performing you've done and do with your family.
So it's different because I am not doing any traditional African songs or wearing traditional African clothing and or regalia. But there are definitely a lot of similarities and a lot of things that I've taken on with me in creating my own production.
As you grew up, your family was always creating art. I know that you don't know what it's like to not grow up that way because that's how you grew up and you've only lived your life. But tell me what that was like, what it was like to grow up always creating and performing.
It was great to know that you have that freedom as a child to kind of be whoever you want. But there was definitely an experience of wanting to assimilate, I feel, like truly, that, you know, took away from that freedom. You know, having the opportunity because it's given to us by our parents, but then also by the society in some way, it's not. Like in some way you kind of like, you know, being a free artist or a creative is kind of like not really considered a real person in society. You know, you're not going to make any money. You're not going to be successful. You're going to struggle. You're going to, you know, how are you going to survive, you know? And I don't know. I just kind of had to go through that journey of, okay, well, yeah, let me just assimilate and do what is accepted as a way of being successful, especially like through school and all that. You know, you're really trained to get a job, you know. You're not really trained to, oh yeah, go be an artist, go be a singer, go be this. It's like, yeah, do that in school, it's fun, it's extracurricular, but then, you know, once the real world hits, you better go get a job. A real job. That's kind of what affected my experience, I feel, learning about my culture and my traditions. I was 11 years old in the 90s. I feel like the 90s was just really a hard time, especially for like African American people, because there was the whole like war on drugs that was happening. And like, I do remember having friends who were, you know, their parents were like in jail, you know, and like they, you know, didn't really have really nice, healthy homes. And so, I don't know, I kind of feel like I had to create who I am. I had to go through a journey of understanding what is my true purpose, like who am I without all these outside influences, even my parents, you know, because that is a great influence to grow up doing tradition and culture and keeping Africa strong and alive. And I do incorporate that in my own music, but I did grow up listening to like pop and, you know, like R&B and soul and disco and like rock. And I just really wanted to experiment all music and all ways that people live life and use that as my way of sending a message that we are all one, we are all connected.
How did you put your band together?
My first musician that I collaborated with was actually like my brothers. They would play drums when I would sing. Even my dad once, I remember he used to play like this kind of like a sansa or instrument that he would play a melody to, and I'll just like write a song to it. Like, you know, he might have known it, but I did sing it to him later. But anyways, so I wrote some songs, like they were all a cappella, and I went to an open mic, and it was actually on my birthday. I was turning 22. I announced, like, you know, I had some friends come over, and I was like, you know, this is an announcement as well as my birthday. Like, I want to be a singer. I want to be a writer. I want to, like, you know, do this. I want to take it seriously. And everyone was so supportive, like the few friends that were there. And that same night, there were like musicians who were interested in like supporting me. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm about this. And since then, you know, I was, that was just a journey. And I was working with different musicians at the time, you know, just really being open to collaborating with really whoever was interested in working with me. Because I just was, to me, I was learning. I was in the journey of learning how this works, who I am, how I'm gonna do this. But I knew Lady Moon and the Eclipse was the name. And that whenever I perform, I'm the moon, my band is the sun, they are the stars that are giving me light, and the audience is the earth, the multi-diverse group of beings. And together we are in alignment, and also we are sending a message of alignment that exists in our like, I already knew all this.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, a long time ago, and I just kept it a lot. I just kept believing in it. I just never gave up. I've played with so many different musicians. I've had to like end it and start it up again and end it and start it up again. I moved in the city when I was 24 in 2010, and to study music, I was studying music at Hunter College. And I just didn't want to really be a classical musician, though. That's kind of the direction I felt the school was bringing me in.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I kind of want to be more free and like more open. So I went back into the streets, I guess, of experiencing music and working musicians that just hear by sound. Like, it doesn't have to be me creating a score and giving it to people. It's like, let me go back to the other way. And by when I did that, I started meeting, you know, musicians that were actually really legit and ready to like do this with me. They were around my age and they really wanted to do it. And so, you know, that's kind of how it developed. And I met the keyboard player Arlen first. We did a lot of shows together, and I would like find other musicians, percussions to support us when we did shows. But it was mostly him and I working together to compose music. And then the drummer came along. Arlen invited the drummer who wanted to come to the city to pursue music, and he's Ken, and he's actually now my husband.
Okay.
Because he so did a great job. He actually did a great job at, you know, taking everything that I loved about music and the way I live my life to like the next level. Like, and he was just so supportive, and we were just both really supportive of each other just as friends. And it was as if we were the same being, you know, working with each other. So then it was about a year later, we just started dating, and then he became the drummer and the manager, and he kind of really pushed through with his super fire energy, because I'm all about astrology. He's an Aries rising, and really brought us to like a whole nother way of operating with this project, which is why I feel like we are at where we are now. You know, with all of us working together, of course, but it's like he really had that drive, and it's great.
How do you think it will be to have your whole family performing a whole weekend at Hudson Hall?
I really believe it to be a magical explosion.
It sounds
especially
like
if people come and experience all of us. Because I have a twin sister who's has an art show up at the library right now, the Hudson Library. We're really coming into a very climactic period for everyone in the family. My mom's play, my Eclipse Season tour, which lands at the Opera House, and also my sister's opening show, and my brother's returning from Africa. He was just on tour in Africa. And it's just so much is happening right now during this time, and, you know, of my dad passing. And, you know, it's a strong power, and I really believe that he's here with us. Like, he's a part of all of it, you know, and making us sure that we all together. We always have our family reunions during the summer, so it's kind of like this crazy, magical, like, family reunion weekend where the family's all together and we're all performing at the Grand Opera House, you know. And it's going to be grand. I'm really happy to say that I'm going to be designing and making all of the costumes for the play. So I'm excited to do that. I started doing that when I was 15, when my mom first started doing plays in Hudson. But she always did get support from the Opera House, too. They were always very supportive since day one. And so it's just a great opportunity to be able to perform on the stage after the renovations. It's going to be a real true, like, melange, you know, of what Badila is, you know, and how we have made an impact in the world and in our community just by being the example that we are.
Lady Moon and the Eclipse will perform at Hudson Hall on Saturday at 7 p.m. as part of the Badila family celebration in Hudson, New York. To learn more, visit hudsonhall.org. I know we're here for a contest. I'm trying to live your conscience. Everything come from Africa. Teaching or teach me nonsense. We the black panthers on the blackboard. They don't let us in, we in the back door. Fast life, we got passports. 150 on the dashboard like room. Milando Badila, a.k.a. Young Paris, creates Afrobeat hip-hop music with an electronic injection on Jay-Z's Roc Nation label. His most recent album is My Tribe, and he's just returned to the States after a tour in Africa. He'll perform at Hudson Hall on Friday at 9 p.m. Young Paris, welcome.
Thank you very much. Just getting off of this massive trip, so I'm a bit jet-lagged, but I'm going to try to keep my chin high for this interview. For sure.
Thank you very much. So tell me about where you were on the tour.
We did 6 countries in Africa. So I actually just released an album. It's called My Tribe. It was out on May 16th.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was to make an album curated for like the African sound that complements my original sound and take it to the continent. So we started in Abidjan. We did Lagos, Nigeria, Congo, Brazzaville, Congo, Kinshasa, Nairobi, Kenya, and Casablanca, Morocco.
How was it?
It was amazing. You know, it was a very, it's an interesting story for me because I've been kind of preaching this ambiance of the beauty of Africa for many years and really carrying on the tradition of my parents. And to kind of take it on at this magnitude and at this scale and to be received the way I was really enlightening. You know, just going to the continent and having a small team kind of navigating me through the city and just learning about the cultures and the languages and, you know, not only being there to perform or to do my press and media, but also learning a lot about just what culturally drives people in each city and each country. So, you know, a lot of times when people think of Africa, they kind of have this one perspective of what's going on in the entirety of the continent. But, you know, as you travel and witness, you know, South Africa and West and East, you really see so many kind of cultural differences. And you really just learn that this is, you know, it's a massive conversation where we really ask about Africa, you know.
How is the music that you create as Young Paris different but related to the music and theater that you made growing up with your family?
Well, you know, we came from the traditional dance and drum ballet, so this is very, the outline is totally different. It's really, when you're coming from traditional drum and dance, this is, you know, djembes, this is regalia that was birthed through tribal village life. And, you know, really built on tradition, so my parents really preserved these different outlines that were done for hundreds of different years and translated them in a contemporary way in their time. And, you know, now, you know, we grew up with these sounds and with these rhythms and with these songs, but, you know, also growing up as a contemporary African, African-American in the States, you know, I was also inspired by and driven by my peers. So getting into hip-hop, getting into electronic music, getting into dance, these were things that were a lot more modern, but I also found a way to kind of complement some of our traditions and add them into the modern and pop cultural way of approaching music and art.
How did you begin creating your Afrobeat and hip-hop kind of music? Do you make your own beats, or do you write the lyrics and work with producers?
Yeah, so I made a lot. I used to make a lot of the beats early in the days. These days, I work with a lot more producers, but my sound definitely started more of like an Afro-electronic sound where, you know, at that time I was really driven by electronic music and adding like Afro elements into it, driving into more of a contemporary Afrobeat sound that is really driven by like West and Central Africa. But, you know, it just depends on what inspires me at the time. You know, now I listen to a lot of acts like Wizkid and Davido and Tekno and Tiwa Savage and, you know, a lot of talents that are really driving the new sound of Afrobeats, and I had the privilege of working with a lot of them. But, you know, I would say before my sound was much more Afro-electronic, and now it's a lot more Afrobeats. You know? And Afrobeats is really just like the new sound that's coming out of Africa. So it's also a similar way of keeping like Afro sounds involved into contemporary sounds. You know?
What has it meant to you to be signed by Roc Nation?
It means a lot. You know, it means a lot for Africans. I think at the time of my signing, that was a really big wave of acceptance into the Afrobeat music, and I think a lot of people were seeing this page turning of how Africans were also being accepted in pop culture. And because I've been a voice for, you know, a lot of these subjects for a very long time, that was like a really cool moment to me to be celebrated by, you know, Jay and the label and them just recognizing what I've been doing. Because, you know, as an artist, when you're coming up and you're grinding, you never really know who's paying attention and who's taking you serious and who's really invested in what you're creating. So that really was like a turning point for me to really understand that, you know, what I'm doing has a mission and, you know, and you know, there are definitely people paying attention to it. So it's been cool. You know, I've been there nearly 2 years now, and they're very supportive. You know, obviously, because I do Afrobeats, there isn't a huge market for that yet in the States. Mm-hmm. So there are challenges, but for the most part, it's a very supportive label. That, you know, it's a big, big staff, but they're very encouraging, and they kind of let me do what I want. So it's cool.
You're also a model. How did that happen, and what is that like? Are there special skills to be like a professional model that you had to learn, or did it come naturally to you?
Nah, I mean, I guess that was natural too. I always kind of been into fashion, and I became an ambassador with the CFDA, Fashion Council of America. And since then, I mean, even before then, you know, I was just known for my style and putting different types of fabrics together, whether it was high-end, you know, brands, or they were just brands I supported. You know, I would mix and match and kind of added my own flair to it. And I really started to get received and accepted by the fashion world. So, you know, modeling just became another thing within, you know, my expression of being an artist. So I would get a lot of photos taken of me. And because I wear this paint on my face, there's a unique flair that excited a lot of different brands. And one in particular was Next Models, and I had to deal with them for a year. And you know, there wasn't too much moving, so I recently signed with Wilhelmina,
mm-hmm.
which is another premier modeling agency, but which is going well. But, you know, when you're a model, you're doing a lot of campaigns and editorials, and, you know, it's a cool outlet to have, but it's definitely a lot of work because you have to get up early mornings, you have to take a lot of photos of yourself, you have to stay in shape. But it's definitely work, you know.
Do you wear your maquillage every day?
Often, not every day. Often. Usually when I do engagements that I'm kind of expressing what my story is about, which mm-hmm. tend to be often, but there are definitely days where I just want to kick back and sleep in.
Sure. Last thing I wanted to ask you about before I let you go is Melanin and Melanin Monday. Could you tell us about that sort of online brand and campaign and what it means?
Yeah, so I started a hashtag in 2016. It's called Melanin Monday, and the idea was to encourage people of color to celebrate themselves for being people of color, you know, because obviously growing up in the States, when you're darker skin, and even around the world, like, you know, people of darker skin tend to deal with more issues of skin tone and self-esteem around skin tone. Because I also dealt with these issues, I wanted to create an outlet where we can use this term called melanin and make it a cool way that people can actually celebrate themselves for being people of color. So, you know, essentially melanin is a science, and it's a very complicated conversation, but I definitely wanted to use what I was educated into a way to make it cool and have people kind of celebrate their melanin. It blew up, and it actually was partially responsible for why people talk about melanin today. So it was a really accomplishable goal that really was kind of just a theme and a hashtag online that blew up and became its own monster. But, you know, till this day, people still hashtag Melanin Monday. And since then, we created a brand that's actually built around the beauty and accents of people of color. So we're going to be creating a lot of outlets where we can build conversations and do activities and even a music festival where we can just create an outline where people can really celebrate themselves for being people of color. I think even since then, it's been a really interesting time in the last few years to see how, you know, just people of color are using different outlets to really celebrate themselves. And I believe this is definitely partially responsible. So Melanin is definitely a project I'm very passionate about. It's like a legacy project for me, so you'll definitely be seeing a lot more of the stuff with Melanin.
Young Paris is performing as part of the Badila Family Weekend at Hudson Hall in Hudson, New York, 9 p.m. on Friday. It's been very cool to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, love. Thank you so much.
Young Paris will perform at Hudson Hall in Hudson, New York on Friday at 9 p.m. as part of the Badila Family Weekend. To learn more, visit hudsonhall.org. That link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable.
Slow down, slow down.